And joining us right now at PNP Network is John Kasich. He's a former congressman from Ohio and the author of the book Stand for Something, The Battle for America's Soul. And he has written something that I have been talking about for years here on this show, and that is the disintegration of this country, the morality, the lack of morality, and the tabloid type of lifestyle that we're all leading. It's not a good thing, and you've written about it here. How's the response been?
Well, the book's a bestseller, so, you know, it's been pretty good. And what I talk about in the book is that there's a battle going on, because I don't think all is lost, but I am concerned about the fact that sometimes people are willing to trade their character, their reputations, their integrity to get ahead or to, you know, make money or to become famous. And I think it's a battle versus those people who say, no, there's no amount of money or glory or fame that's worth my trade, my reputation, and forcing me to forget what my parents taught me. And, you know, one of the most vivid examples that's come up lately is this story that's emerging out of New Orleans, where we see people who took money that was destined for people whose entire lives were wiped out, who were, you know, ripping off the system and going on vacations and buying rotten videos and you know, all these crazy things they were doing down there, versus the people down there who probably could have cheated the system who said that they wouldn't, you know. And it does make a difference in the way the world spins. And those who stood up and said, no, I'm not going to take advantage of this situation, you know, in some ways they're really heroes, and not heroes so much as they are leaders, right? Because it is the right thing to do, and we don't want to say someone's a hero because they do the right thing, because doing the right thing is, you know, what we ought to be doing.
That's true. I know down the, we had some of the folks who were made homeless by Katrina living down the Cape, on Cape Cod, and they used the cards for lap dances and liquor and all these things that were going on. It was a big story out here in Boston. But again, you know,
what are people thinking about? You know, why would you do that? You know, and anybody can make a mistake. We're all a bunch of knuckleheads, right? I mean, just some are knuckleheads more than others. But you stop and you think about that, what that money was destined to do, and to think of the people that lost their lives, they lost their homes, and then people are out there, you know, using the money to go get a lap dance.
Mm-hmm. It's Come disgusting.
On. You know, wake up, straighten up, realize how stupid that is.
But you know something, we live in this age now, and I'm part of the media, so I take some responsibility for it, although I try to accentuate things that are positive, and things like the Left Behind movie series rather than some of these garbage movies that are out there. But I mean, you look at sports, and you have all these people who have cheated using steroids and human growth hormones and are rewriting record books. You have people in business like Enron doing things the wrong way for greedy things, and it's for people who are trying to live their life, an honest life like I have tried it and my family has tried, you get punished by actually being honest in this society the way we are currently set up.
You know, it's amazing you pick up those two examples, because they're two of the examples I use a lot. Let's stop and think about Enron for a second. The first thing I think we find is that the one area where if you do break the law and you do violate the code of ethics in the area of business, you can end up getting punished. And you imagine these guys facing a lifetime in jail. And we have seen the people from Enron who have gone out there, ripped people off. And, you know, these are guys that have, you know, multiple homes, multiple cars. And I like to think that if they could turn the clock back, they would not do what they've been doing. I'm sure some of them are hardened and would do it over and over again. But I like to think that a number of them would not, and they're going to pay a very severe penalty. And I contrast that versus a guy like Bill Gates, you know, who's given away literally billions of dollars to help people who can't help themselves. And I ask people, who would you rather be associated with? And when you talk about sports, there's nothing more that drives people to a higher frenzy in New England, especially than sports, whether it's football or baseball. And we watch those people that play baseball over there at that great ballpark of yours, and we think about this guy who comes in and uses the growth hormone to hit home runs and break records, even though, you know, I mean, first of all, we ought to do something about it. We ought to take those records away or put an asterisk or a statement or whatever. But at the same time, I think we all know as individual fans that, you know, this thing is tainted. And, you know, he's not going to have the kind of celebration or the kind of applause that he would normally get if he followed the rules. So in some ways, it doesn't pay. And in other ways, for those that stand up and stand tall, there's a big payoff, which is you can look yourself in the mirror every day, you know?
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I know at one point you ran for president, and I'm a registered Democrat at this point, used to be a Republican. I switched back and forth. I'm a little critical of both parties. I think maybe we need something, a strong third party. Do you think there's an opening at this point in this country for someone to come in and really be a leader?
Well, I think that the third parties have always arisen when people feel a void. And I do think there is a void in the country today with political parties acting more out of partisanship and self-interest than there is the country's interest. And so I think there is an opportunity perhaps for somebody to emerge and talk about that. But in terms of the viability of a third party, I don't really see it because of the infrastructure, the money that's involved. But third parties are always helpful in delivering a message. And remember how Ross Perot delivered a message, mm-hmm. and throughout our history we saw it done. And I agree with you. I think the country's very, very unsettled about what they see as politicians being unable to do some of the basic things that they were sent into government to do. And, you know, 06 could be one of two things. Either it could be a significant turning point where there's going to see a lot of people thrown out of office, or maybe it's going to even reflect the fact that people at this point in time sort of given up on the system. It doesn't matter. It's going to be interesting to see how 06 unfolds.
Well, I find it very disturbing when I hear people like John Kerry and all these folks on the liberal left slamming the president, slamming his efforts at the war, and really hurting the soldiers who are overseas by constantly talking about pullouts. You know, we have to get these guys out of here. After the president is face to face with the president of Iraq, telling him that we're gonna answer our promises.
Yeah, I guess my feeling about that is I don't mind when somebody criticizes a war. I'd rather have them, you know, doing that and then calling the president a liar and all this other stuff that I hear. I mean, we can have different opinions when it comes to war, and I think that, you know, the one thing the politicians have to keep in mind is, you know, how their rhetoric affects the people that are on the ground, because they have a very tough job to do. But when you speak out against war, you know, it's not always easy. People call you a lot of names, so even though I can disagree with somebody if they take a position that we ought to be out tomorrow, you know, I'm not going to trash him for having that point of view. I can respect John Murtha. I know him. I served with him. I worked with him. I don't agree with him on this, but I'm not going to vilify him because of the things that he says.
See, I'm more critical of John Kerry because John Kerry voted for the thing, and
right.
Now he's, you know, turning around and going.
Well, you watch him every day. You know, you live with John Kerry.
Unfortunately. I wish we could get rid of him, but I guess not. We're stuck with him. I was hoping.
You know what I feel bad
president.
About for John Kerry? I I'm not a Kerry supporter by any stretch of the imagination, but I really feel bad for the fact that he didn't stand up during that campaign and talk about his war record and allowed a bunch of people to run him down. And it just mystifies me to this day how he could have let other people denigrate what he did. And it's pretty amazing to me. And I think it was a lost opportunity for him, and he has to live with it the rest of his life.
Well, it was. I think he should have won that election, and the reason he lost is because he didn't step up and stand up.
He was listening to
presidential.
And, you know, I got to tell you, it's very hard in politics because you get a lot of people around you, and you get multiple voices, all of them as passionate and, you know, convincing you that you've got to do what they say because it's in the best interest. And I guess the mark of a really great leader is the ability to follow their own gut and their own instinct and do the things that, you know, that little voice tells them they need to do. And when they walk away from it, you know, usually things don't work out so well.
Hmm. I see all these things going on nationally, and I wonder why someone like yourself, you left office. Why did you actually leave? You were a congressman for 18 years and a senator.
Right. That sounds like enough, doesn't it?
Well, I know, but didn't you say to yourself, you know, I know you ran for president as well, so you must have had ideas that you thought would work for the country.
Well, I did, and I went out and I expressed them, and, you know, it didn't work out. But going back into the Congress after I'd been there so long and I achieved, you know, virtually all of my major goals, it would have been occupying space. And I think the longer you serve in public office, the more out of touch you are. So I thought it was important to leave, to not be the center of every conversation or, you know, it just was important to get a change, and I think most politicians ought to do it. It doesn't mean I couldn't go back in. I could, but I don't have any desire to, but, you know, I could if that's what I wanted to do. It was just time to move on and bring about change in other ways, which is,
like,
you know, what I'm doing in my life.
And by making the book Stand for Something, where you're talking about taking a stand on government, sports, business,
right,
many things people should be doing, hopefully you can rekindle that kind of spirit and support that you were looking for in the election.
Look, you know, I go out all over the country. I get to make speeches. You know, I'm going to go out and speak to a group of sports executives coming up here in the next month or so. And I'm going to go in and talk to them about their responsibility when they own sports teams, how these sporting figures behave. What a great opportunity. You know, I travel the country. I can say what I want to say. I'm not really part of a team, so I don't have to worry about, you know, attacking the eighth batter in the lineup. I can say what I want to say. And, you know, I'm on television. I get to have my say there. I'm in the business world. I get to demonstrate, you know, the way I comport myself there. Frankly, I think it's a lot more of a robust life than what I had when I spent all my time down there under the dome in the Capitol, mm-hmm, running back and forth to vote like Pavlov's dogs. You know, I mean, it was a great time when I was there, but, it, you know, now's a new time.
You know, one of the things that's one of my pet peeves, and I talk about on the show a lot, is the breakdown of education in this country. And I was just watching a film, and it had the person on that did it. It's called Boys of Baraka. And it's really about how the school systems are failing our children, especially in the urban areas where there's no education happening. It's just pretty much self-defense.
Boy, you know, I think it's true, and exactly what you're saying, with the exception of this. I think in suburban schools in America, we're lulling ourselves into a false sense of of security, that we think that our suburban districts are doing well, and I don't think they are. I don't think that they are performing at the levels they ought to be performing, and serving our kids at the level they ought to be serving them, in a 21st century environment where, believe me, we have a global competition, and I just almost get tired of talking about this, because as much as I yell and scream for school choice, I'm not convinced that we will get there. Now, a lot of the radio talk show hosts that I talk to, and I've spoken to, you know, quite a few, I'd say, you know, somewhere in the order of maybe 75 talk shows I've done with this book, I'm beginning to get the sense that the people that lead these shows understand the importance of school choice. And that's the only way it's going to happen, is if everybody starts talking about the fact that we need to end the monopoly in public education. Because right now, I just don't see it happening. I see mothers and fathers thinking that their school district is fine, that their teachers are great. And when they look at the performance, some of them will be right, but too many of them will be wrong. And we can't fall in love with our own song, you know, because we just deny our kids a real opportunity to be able to realize their hopes and dreams.
We've seen a decrease here in Massachusetts of local aid, and we've seen the school systems who have to increase their budgets just to pay for fuel and insurance and teacher rate increases. We've seen them actually be very, very stable and actually going downhill for a while now. And it's interesting to note that when you have community forums and try to get everybody together, parents together, to kind of fight for more money with the legislator, no one shows up. Apathy rules.
Well, I mean, look, I think you can't have good – I don't think that you can have good education without some amount of adequate funding, but I don't think that funding is the issue here. I mean, my kids go to a Christian school. Their teachers are paid far less than the public schools. They don't have the facilities that the public schools have, yet the grades, the outcomes, are better than most of the public schools in the area. The same is true of the parochial schools and the private schools. Why? Because in those schools, you know, they have discipline. If you act up, they throw you out. And I think the same ought to occur in the public schools. If you're a bad actor, if you're a troublemaker, you should be taken out. And you should be put into a school with a bunch of other troublemakers. And then we'll go find some adult who's good at dealing with troubled kids. But what we're doing in public education today, too much of the time, is we cater to the lowest common denominator. We worry too much about the poor performers. And as a result, we don't encourage those in the middle and those above to get even higher. And, you know, I just get, it's like back to the same old argument I've been through for 30 years. You know, what they all say in the public schools is, if we just had more money, everything would be great. That is the biggest single myth that I think exists in America today. How do you like that one? And it burns me up.
Well, I kind of agree with you. And in fact, I've said it before in public forums and talked about the unions and some of the things that are happening here. But you know something? The unions are very, very powerful. And
you know
they want
powerful?
More money. They put radio ads on and stuff asking for more money.
You know what? First of all, if you're in the teachers union, why don't you stand up more and more and be for kids? Secondly, if you're a politician, why do you live in fear of the teachers unions? I mean, is that how you would teach your kids?
Well, they know that.
If you're afraid of something, you crawl under a table.
John,
you
know what happens?
Politicians are doing today. They live in fear of the teachers' unions.
Yeah, what happens is that because if you turn against the union by not supporting their immense raises they want of any union,
or their tenure or anything else.
Yeah, I mean, look at Mayor Menino in the fire department. They almost ruined the convention here because he had not settled their contract yet. I mean, you know, they were out in the streets in large numbers.
Well, look, the only thing I can tell you is if you're and I'm not suggesting that you go on some kamikaze mission here and just, you know, blow up your political career. On the other hand, I don't encourage you to have a political career where you don't do anything and you live in fear of interest groups, whether it's labor or whether it's business. I don't care who it is. If you live in fear of it, what's the point of being in public life? And, you know, you mentioned the fact I was in Congress for 18 years. I was in the legislature for 4 years. And, you know, my reputation among the people that I served is sky high. And it's sky high. I think that's why I don't want to go back in. I'll screw it up the second time. But it's high because, you know, I was my own person. I marched to my own drummer. I didn't let people bully me. I didn't sit around worrying about how to tell people yes. I did what I wanted to do. And if they didn't like it, fine. Throw me out, you know. But at the end of my career, I got stuff I'm proud of. And I think it's a good model for how legislators ought to behave, plain and simple.
What do you think about the situation with pork? Everybody's bringing stuff home to the community. I mean, they had an emergency thing that was going on in Congress a while back about the war, and everybody started throwing in all this pork that was not related to anything just to get it in. And I find that really disheartening. But again, the Congress people come home and they send us news releases about all the money they're bringing
back. Yeah, that's right. And then they get slapped on the back and they go cut a ribbon and all that. I didn't do pork when I was in Congress, and I just wasn't into it. I said, if you want pork, go find somebody else. And you know, I was getting large majorities in a district that was that was really not particularly safe for a Republican. And you know, the reason I had to do it is I was chairman of the budget committee. My job was to balance the budget. I got the job done. But if I was carving out a little piece of it for myself and for my district, what kind of a leader would I be? So I just didn't do it. I just told people at home, you know, no, I'm sorry, I can't help you with that. That's the way it is.
Hmm. Well, it's too bad that everybody else doesn't do that, you know what I mean? But maybe that's why you're not there anymore, though.
Well, I'm not there anymore because I chose not to be. I'm not there. I wasn't driven out of office. I could have been reelected for the next 1,000 years, you know. So didn't have anything to do with that. It had to do with the fact that, you're there. Well, you go out on top, or you could just stay there forever and let them carry you out. And I wasn't. I wasn't under the view that what I really needed to do was just see how many times I could get reelected and how many years I could be down there. It was time to move on, and it was a great decision on my part.
I got one more question for you because I have Cheryl Ladd hanging on the phone here, and I want to talk to the
local. Pretty good. I'd rather talk to Cheryl Ladd than me any day of the week.
Yeah, well, she looks a little better. But one of the things that concerns me is really what's going on with TV, movies, music, the stuff that they're putting out there on VH1 and MTV and all these different stations and Stern Show. I like Stern Show, but I mean, it went way over the top. What's your feeling about censorship and about the media in general in terms of what they're putting out there?
Well, I don't want censorship because a government that can't even figure out how to evacuate people from New Orleans is certainly not equipped to decide what the heck we ought to see. But I think that there's two ways to look at it. First of all, you know, I look at MTV. I've got two young daughters, and I watch MTV. But there are times when I can't watch it because, as Oprah says, it devalues a whole generation of young women by making them, you know, sex objects and all this. Just watch the videos and you'll see what I mean. At the same time, I don't want to censor, but I'm going to tell my daughters we're not going to watch this stuff. And if I ever run into the people that make the videos, I'm going to talk to them about what they're producing. And, you know, and I might write a letter here or there. You know, there's a little story in my book about the movie Fargo. And, you know, I know Fargo won an Academy Award, but I wish somebody would have told me that they were going to grind somebody up in a wood chipper, you know. Mm-hmm. And I went back to the store and complained to the manager and said, if you're going to sell these movies, at least let me know they're violent. Put a little notice on them, you know. All we can do is what we can do. We can control our house. And by the way, we ought to take the computer out of our kids' bedrooms. They don't belong there. They ought to be in the common space of the house. I can register my protests, and I got to watch that I don't become an old fuddy-duddy who's just put off because somebody's doing something different. But when I see glorifying sex and glorifying violence, and I know that it can have a very negative impact on my daughters, I'm going to stand up and say something.
I was actually the first columnist in the country to write about MySpace.com and the dangers of it. Got picked up by Boston Globe and then the national media, because my sons and our daughters have to use the den computer. We don't allow them in the bedrooms because they're dangerous. I mean, you know, it's just like allowing strangers to come into the house.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, we tell our kids don't talk to strangers, and we watch what they do on TV, and then we let them run wild with the computer. And the problem is, for a lot of us, is that when we deal with our kids on the computer, we operate with one hand or sometimes two hands tied behind our back because we don't understand the technology. But the point is, we better understand it. We just had a young girl that was on the internet and flew to Jordan to meet some guy.
Exactly,
and we know about the problems of online predators. We just got to be more vigilant. We got to just be more careful. And, we got to care a little bit, not care so much about our kids, but put more time in with them.
You can watch John on Heartland, of course, the Fox News Network show, and pick up Stand for Something, The Battle for America's Soul. It's from Warner Books. It's a great book. John, thanks so much for talking.
I enjoyed it.
Take care.